Shut up and sit down.
We cyclists are a funny old breed.
We are. What type of rider are you?
I'm just a regular bloke with a regular bike. I'm your average dad who enjoys a nice ride. I wear lycra and fluoral when I'm riding at night. I piss everybody off and ignore the red lights. My life, my rights, don't you know who we are? Cable ties on my helmet and I pretend I'm a car.
Hello, my faithful listeners. You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Legrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. You can now listen to the guys ramble on about riding bikes and possibly some triathlon mumbo jumbo, or you can just keep hitting the 15-second rewind button and hang out with me. After all, we know that's why you came here.
Your legs, your legs, your legs, your legs. I ride really slow in the middle of the lane while drivers behind me are going.
That sounds about right.
I'm a cycler. He's a cycler.
People are smart. Do they say, has Lance Armstrong ever tested positive? No. Has Lance Armstrong been tested? A lot.
Wow. That is some confident lying. Remember, this is the man who looked America dead in the eyes and said, bicycling is a very cool sport, and we f***ing believed him.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Von Dering, and I'm here with, drumroll please, Evan Price.
Woo!
It's been a minute.
It has been way too long, that is for sure.
Yeah.
It has. This is my New Year's goal. I only have one, is just to be on the podcast more in 2022.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
It's a short list of goals.
You are one busy mofo, so we totally get it, but to get you back would be fantastic.
Yeah, we're all busy with different stuff. It's just there was a hot period of very busy for a bit there. Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna do round three of the interviews with the guys here. Yep. So
I get to say what I was drinking though.
Oh, what do you drink? Oh, that actually
from
good.
Starbucks, the Nitro Cold Brew. Our Starbucks right next to the clinic here actually is our very own Colleen on the team.
Yep.
Is the manager there. So
yes, that's
go
good,
to that Starbucks
good
frequently.
Hookup, yeah. That's probably one of the very few things that I actually like at Starbucks, and that's that nitro cold brew.
Yeah, it's good.
Good.
I like it. It also has a lot of caffeine in it. So
that's why I like
think
it.
I think the because like the nitro and the cold brews usually have more caffeine, is what somebody told me who knows more about coffee.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This week, instead of doing a backpedal, because we're going to save Evan's backpedal. Well, long story short, he's got a big race coming up this weekend, so there's not much to backpedal yet. We're going to wait until this one of these
next
other
week,
weeks.
Yeah.
Hopefully Evan will be back here and he can tell us all about that. But we're gonna backpedal your life. How about that?
We talked about this idea before. I actually kind of like this one because this is we should do this with every single podcast, just a full review of everybody's life. No, I'm joking. No, nobody would like that. But
so many fewer
Lance,
subscribers.
Yeah.
Right on. No real news to go through, but just real quick, we talked about this a little bit recently, but cyclocross is getting hot and heavy right now over in Europe. Granted, there's the new variant that's kind of causing some things to get shut down because of COVID, but
I know, I was hoping
are you pretty excited about the three kings going after?
Yeah, this is, so I watched that GCN video talking about the schedule that Pidcock, Van Aert, and MVP are all doing, and I'll tell you what, I mean, Pidcock and Woot are really taking on a lot, which is awesome. I think that's going to be exciting to see those two frequently go at it. And then, I mean, obviously having MVP there is going to be big, but I'm more excited to watch Pidcock race.
Yeah.
I really like watching him race. Yeah. Yep. I think he's super exciting. And when he's in a cyclocross race, even in last year, I would watch pretty frequently. Like whenever he was racing, I would.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch. I'm really looking forward to that. So anybody that you're picking, like, I think that they're supposed to square off the three of them three times. Do you think it's going to be a one each kind
of
thing?
You know, no, I really want to pick. So this isn't just because I'm cheering for the guy I want to win. I'm actually going to pick Pidcock to win.
Really?
He is.
All three?
No, but I think he's going to win the most. So I'm going to pick him in two of three.
Okay.
Two of three. Or just overall, I think he's going to come out on top between everything.
Gotcha.
The reason being is, one, I think he's actually really focusing on cyclocross as like a goal. The other two are coming off of amazing form. I think they're probably going to see a little dip just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
We say that every time, then they still win. But I think you're going to see a little dip in their form. And I really do think he's young, which means at some point I think you're going to see a big spike in his performance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's maybe the most talented overall young cyclist ever. I don't think there's ever been a guy coming through at his age that's like as wholly talented as he is in everything.
Not even MVP.
MVP maybe. I mean, he's in the conversation with Wout MVP, like, and him. But when you're talking about whole riders now, this is really the first generation of this.
Can
anybody think of another cyclocross rider that was dominant in cyclocross, potentially dominant in mountain biking and road cycling?
Yeah. I mean, Sagan, I really can't think kind of, because he has such a prolific mountain bike background, but he didn't really race much cyclocross, did he?
No, I don't think.
He's a good one-day guy on the road, but like a Grand Tour, not so much, but it's there a stage was, guy.
Oh, my God, I just forgot his name. He was the GC contender who, Cadell Evans.
Oh, Cadell Evans.
Cadell Evans was a very, very good junior mountain biker.
Okay.
I don't think he ever raced cyclocross. I could be completely wrong there, but he was known as a mountain biker before. Yep. Egan Bernal was a very good mountain biker too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, go watch those races. Stay tuned.
Exactly. Yeah.
Should make for a good trainer session, big right?
This weekend, the only thing we got in lead out news from triathlon is Palm Springs, the race I'll be in, which does have some big names, and then Clash Daytona, which is like the big championship race, and there's a third base. Xterra Worlds too. Xterra Worlds. So you get to see some mountain biking. Yep.
Well, by the time people hear this, these things will all be done. Past. So
yep, exactly. Yeah. Everybody, so watch those.
Just real quick though, you are doing the Palm Springs Half Ironman.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's a pretty stacked deep pro field. Or is there gonna be some decent names there?
You know, usually this race is not like a big time race because it's very end of the season. It's known as more of a middle of the pack pros try to go out to this race and do really well. Most of the big guys have already ended their seasons, but with 2020 being so weird, I mean, you got guys now building for St. George Worlds full. You got guys building for Kona that same year. So there's like this off season is going to be weird because some guys really aren't taking an off season. They're kind of racing in December, maybe taking a little time off in January, and then they're right back into it February, March, April. So this is, I think a lot of guys are still coming in really good shape into this race. And now you got three huge names. You got Lionel Sanders decided to race it. Vincent Lewis, who is a French Olympian, one of the best in the world, period. I mean, he it's his race to lose. Yep. And then Jelly Geens, who is, for those of us who watch short course racing, is really fast. Like, Vincent Lewis is scared of this guy in short course. Hmm. So if Jelly Geens has his best day, he could win this race. There's three guys who could win this race, and they're all three top 10 in the world. So,
gotcha. Yeah.
None of which is me.
How big is the pro field?
I think 30 or 40 guys. I think it's last time I checked. There's going to be a lot of names bouncing around, though, because guys will put their name on this start list and actually go and race Clash Daytona if they qualify for it, or, you know, just decide not to race and end their season. So I would guess 30, 35 guys will do it.
Gotcha. I don't want to jinx anything, and feel free to say, no, I'm not going to say this, but
I'll toss out predictions.
Okay.
I don't believe in superstitions. I mean,
you're looking pretty stinking strong right now. You're running well. You're riding extremely well. I'm not quite sure what you're doing in the pool, but
The pool could always be much better. After a couple years as a pro now, I am very realistic on where I stand. If the pro field does anything, it humbles you better than anything else.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, Robert Cummins is a good example. I'm sure Robert Cummins could tell you exactly where they're going to place in a field.
Yep.
And I kind of have the same idea. You get a real, very realistic view of how good you are compared to them. And it's very hard to say like, oh, I think I'm capable of this, when you know you're not going to beat some of these guys. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think on my absolute best day, if everything goes perfectly, I'll say I'm right around 14, 15 out of 30, 35.
That's still pretty stinking.
Which I would be over the moon. If I'm well into that top 20, I would be ecstatic.
Do you have a goal time?
Yes. This course, though, can play to the race. So if there's a lot of wind, if the new bike course is a little more challenging than what people guessed, then we might run into some issues with speed. And the run course is an honest run course. So it is not a speedy run course, which I'm actually fine with. I want the run course to be as hard as possible. So 359, 358 on this course would be perfect day. Absolute perfect day. My expectation is under 405.
Okay.
So
what's the best time you've ever thrown down? I know that it's all subjective to the course, but have you ever done sub 4?
404 is my fastest. I've never been under 4. Okay. You know, if I land that 40, well, my, as I've been telling my friends, when I did the best in the West race around here, that was a sub-4 day for me on a fast course. That was how good I was feeling that day.
Wow.
It was just a very hilly course. So not going to, you know, you're not going under 4 hours on a course that hilly.
Sweet. We'll be pulling for you. And then if we want to watch you, well, this, we're talking about stuff that people are going to be like, that already happened, but I'm just going to ask you me selfishly right here. If I wanted to watch you, how can I do that?
Yeah. So Ironman Tracker is going to be the way to watch. I'm not sure yet if Ironman's doing a live feed.
Gotcha.
They might be doing a live feed. If they are, then on Facebook, Ironman Live.
Gotcha.
That's how you would see it.
I'll book all the other triathletes and ask them more inside. So, cool. All right, let's talk about Evan Price. I got some questions for you, buddy.
Oh, boy. Yeah? Okay.
Skate or die? Skate or die. Now, you've got some things that you've done in your past, but you used to be a skater, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You used to be pretty good.
I used to have a sticker that said skate or die on the helmet that I wore, and also a skating is not a crime sticker. So I was a little punk when I was 12 years old.
Skating is not a crime, man. Were you sponsored?
So I actually, there was a skating shop that had an indoor skate park called Endless Days. Mm-hmm. I bet they're not open anymore, but that was our spot. And the guy who owned it knew me and a couple of my friends who skated and would give us free boards and free t-shirts.
Okay.
So we used to joke that we were sponsored. At that time, it was funny because that as a skater meant you were sponsored. But now looking back, I was like, there was no paychecks coming in. You basically just got free t-shirts and free boards.
You were a marketing device.
You just wore that stuff. And, you know, we would film, and we had a couple guys in our crew. One of them actually ended up doing triathlons. His name is Alex Cochran. And I played soccer with the kid too, and he was very good.
Okay.
So we had friends of ours who were good in the region. And, in Southern Ohio in that skate scene, I was not one of them. I loved skating and really, you know, I was decent. I was, if you could compare it to triathlon, I was a guy who would have been on the podium of an age group field, basically. And that's about it.
Okay.
But how skating works is mostly you go to the skate park and you can see talent, and there's, you know, you gather around the people who are good and you watch them. And we used to joke that, you know, somebody's good if enough people are watching them there.
Yeah.
There's no awards. So it's, you can do, there's more organized contests now, but this was in the early 2000s where it was just free form street skating.
So were you going to any kind of competition? Were you competing in any way, shape or form? So
actually at the indoor skate park, I think they had some evening competitions that were like, they would set up a couple, like what we call park courses.
Sure.
And a couple ramps, and it was like guys would go off them, and that was basically it. But it was like group skating in that way.
So your big time skating years were from what age to what age?
I think I was 11 or 12. It was right when we got back from Korea.
Uh-huh.
To when I was 15 or 16 were my biggest.
Oh, wow. Age. Okay.
And that was right when I really started to focus on soccer.
Okay.
I had really busted up my knee and hit my head a lot skating.
Okay.
Like, and it was, I think I like torn my MCL for the second or third time skating, and had a bad fall and kind of rung my bell pretty good. And I think at that point I realized I couldn't try to play soccer at a high level and also skate. Yeah. Skating takes a lot out of your body at some point.
Well, so does soccer, but yeah.
It definitely did, yeah. Yeah, skating was, of all the sports I've ever done, I will say I love and appreciate guys who do skating at a high level, because it's highly underappreciated how hard that is on your body.
Yeah. What did your mom and dad have to say about, or what did they think about your skating?
You know, it's funny because my mom, you know, my dad grew, both my parents grew up military. So it was funny because I took a very military approach to how I skated, which was very regimented. I would practice, like I would really practice things a lot. And that's not really part of skate culture. So I think the way that my parents saw me do it is they weren't worried about me getting into the bad scenes of skating, even though there were people around me who, you know, maybe weren't the greatest influences in the sport. But I think they saw that I enjoyed the heck out of it. It kept me out of a lot of trouble, because not to talk bad about Ohio or the Midwest, I love that area, but in small towns in Ohio and stuff, there's a lot of, you know, like you can get in trouble when you're 15 years old really easily. It's not hard to get in trouble. So for me, they realized, oh, that takes up all of his time and he does it way too much. And that's fine, because I would just go to the skate park all day, and that was what me and my buddies would do. We would build ramps. We would build, you know, all this different stuff. So all of our time went into skating, and they realized, oh, he's not doing drugs and stuff like that, like you see on, you know, movies with skateboarders. He's not a burnout. He just loves the sport. So I think that they saw me transfer that passion between sports. So there wasn't anything bad with skating outside of me getting bloodied all the time.
Gotcha. So it kept you out of trouble,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Were you a problem child?
Yeah, God, this is going to be funny because I know team, my mom and dad both listen to this. Nico was my little brother was definitely the bigger troublemaker.
Yeah.
I definitely experimented quite a bit in high school with partying and doing that, and then realized that I really did not like the feeling of being drunk or any other feeling.
Good.
I really didn't like it, which is probably what most endurance athletes realize at some point. You're like, oh, I like being in control of my of myself. And I did a lot of my experimenting in high school and then realized, oh, if I want to do these things at a high level, whether it was soccer, skateboarding, or riding and running and swimming, I couldn't do those other things. So I really quickly realized, like, get your act together.
Gotcha.
And then luckily by the time I got through my freshman or sophomore year in undergrad, I became more of a really clean-cut guy. And that was, you know, I was a guy driving people back from parties and waking up at 6 a.m. on Sundays. So
soccer was in the picture as well. What age did you start playing?
Always since I was really young. Soccer, I was always playing.
Like 3, 4, 5 years old, somewhere in there?
Yeah. Yep.
Like most kids. So that was always an undertone under the skating.
Yep.
And at the time, if you had to pick one, which one was it?
At that time, skating. When I was skating, I would have picked skating over everything.
Really?
Yep, I would have. I love skateboarding more than anything for that 5-6 year period. Yeah,
gotcha.
But I once I got into high school, I became fully focused on, ironically enough, somewhat endurance training.
Yeah,
because I thought in my head, it's funny now that I'm a PT and train people, I realize that soccer as a pure endurance running sport, not terribly important. As a anaerobic recovery and explosiveness training, very important. Mm-hmm. But I thought, oh, if I just run miles all the time, I'll get good at soccer. Mm-hmm. Not the case. I just became a great defensive midfielder that could just run around all game. It's basically all I became.
How far did you go with soccer?
I played through high school. My senior year, I was captain of our high school team. We had a pretty good team. I made, I think, all conference, but I wish somebody would have shook me at that time, be like, man, you are not that good at this sport. You need to do cross country. You are not a good enough soccer player. But I ended up going down the recruiting trail with D2, D3 schools, and then ended up going to Ohio Northern University for soccer. Mm-hmm. And how D3 sports works is you do not get athletic scholarships.
Correct.
So went there off an academic scholarship and played my freshman and sophomore year and rode the bench hard, and then decided that while I was in college is when I really started riding and running a lot, and then started swimming with a buddy of mine who was actually on the soccer team, Mike Giardo. And he is still does bike racing, I believe. But we were the best of friends and rode together every single day. And finally, for me, he played all 4 years. He was 2 years older than me and played all 4 years at Ohio Northern. And for me, after a year and a half, basically, I realized I'm just going to do triathlon. Like, that was it. I was just going to do triathlon full. So year and a half into college soccer, I was like, I'm done with college soccer. I'm just going to move on to just triathlon.
What age were you when you did your first triathlon?
I was 19, I want to say. 19. Gotcha. Yeah. I think it was 19.
You want to tell folks? You've told me before. I know the story, but you want to tell folks what that looked like? What did Evan Price look like?
This is one of my favorites. So I went with Mike Giardo in our club, Ohio Northern Club triathlon team.
Yeah.
Which was, God, man, throwing out these names is so awesome. Dan Henry was a guy on that team who also went into bike racing. Kyle McMenahan, I think, was his name. We had some awesome guys on that team. It was so much fun. And Andy Garlock was another guy on that team, too. And we always did this race, the University of Miami Triathlon, which was an indoor swim followed by a sprint distance bike and then a sprint distance run. And I went there just... All I had done that year was bike racing. So I'd only road raced that year. I had not done a triathlon yet. And I jumped into this race realizing that, like, oh, man, I really don't have, like a triathlon kit. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I just put on my cycling bottoms, the bottoms.
Bib shorts or just shorts?
Just the shorts.
Bib shorts with a big chamois in there.
Yes. Uh-huh. A chamois in these guys. Now, these you know, didn't have the bib straps. They were just the old school cycling shorts, basically. And then jumped in, swam terribly, and then got out, ran in realizing, man, my legs are freezing cold because obviously that soaks all the water in, and ran to transition. It took me like 5 minutes to put on my old school. My dad has these USA Air Force cycling bibs that were like cotton still made. So I'm like, it's freezing outside because this is in April in Ohio.
Hold on. So you swam with bibs, not bibs, but just shorts, cycling shorts.
Yeah.
Got out. Did you disrobe and put on a different bib?
No.
Put this on over.
Just took the cycling jersey and put it on over because it was so cold.
Okay, I thought you said short sleeve. Okay, gotcha.
And then just put it on. Took me forever to get on because obviously once the cotton gets wet, you're like pulling on a.
Yeah.
It's impossible like pulling on a cotton t-shirt when you're soaking wet.
Gotcha.
And I get on the bike and then realize, oh yeah, now I'm freezing to death because this is I'm just frozen basically here. Uh-huh. Rode my blue Allais frame. That was, you know, if anybody's ridden with me earlier when I lived here, that was my original road bike that I had however many years ago. Rode that thing, jumped off, threw on my really old, actually, they were a pair of Brooks. I think they were Brooks Adrenalines, and they were my lawn mowing shoes at that time, too, so they had, like, grass stains all over them.
Yeah.
Trotted through the run in those, got to the finish line, and I was like, man, I really like this sport a lot. I distinctly remember when I crossed the finish line, like being like, oh my gosh, this was really fun. And it was weird because it was exhausting, but anybody who's ever stayed with triathlon knows exactly what that feeling is. You hit that finish line, you're like, okay, this was dangerously fun. And you know, that was what, 12 years ago now, 13 years ago now. So
that's awesome. So let's talk about bike racing real quick. When was your first official bike race?
So my first official bike race was in southeastern Ohio near the West Virginia border at a race called Lake Hope. I wonder if Lake Hope is still around. If it is, it's awesome. Very hilly, pitchy course. Mm-hmm. Like very, very hilly course in kind of back roads, Ohio. Beautiful cycling area, actually. I think Race Across America goes through really close to this area, actually, when it goes into West Virginia. Just like beautiful area. And I flatted three times.
Oh, no.
And had a guy in the field, older guy, I think he was on Team Dayton Cycling, which is a popular cycling team in that area. It's actually Rodrigo Collins' old team. And he gave me, I had one tube, and he had two tubes, gave me three, rode in with me, you know, the whole way. Nicest guy in the world. But I remember after that just being more, like, wanting to get back to road racing because I hadn't been able to finish that race. I, you know, felt like, you know, I grew up a big Tour de France fan. So for me, I was like, I want to experience a road race. So after that, I actually did, oh man, what race was after that? I actually think I did the stage race in Ohio, which was in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
The Queen City Classic, which was a three stage race. And I ended up on the podium of that one, which
good
was
job.
In the 4-5 field. Yeah.
Cool.
Got in a breakaway with two guys who I would still consider friends, Alex Hackney and Tommy Grawl, actually, who are both awesome guys. Yeah. Yeah, we were kind of the young road racing crew coming through at that time, and everybody in the 4-5 field hated us, so we all upgraded to threes really quick and raced threes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you still currently carry your torch, your flame, your man crush for Mr. Lance, not Hepler, Armstrong.
Yes. You know, funny you should mention, I actually just finished his Lance Armstrong's War, written by Dan Coyle, I think, the guy who wrote Tyler Hamilton's book.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I still have a poster of Lance right next to my indoor trainer, which I talk about, but it's a picture of Lance in the 2000, God, he was training for the 2003 tour, I think, and he's on the Alpe d'Huez, and it's this pouring rain picture, and Johan Bernal's just in the car next to him, and it's this quote from Lance. And I'm going to get the quote wrong, but it basically says, I rode when nobody else would ride. That was it.
Nice.
It's great. I love it. I love the Lance Armstrong ideology, everything that guy pushed towards and everything he was. I appreciate, and I don't, me and my dad just talked about this recently. I think you can dislike parts of a person and still be a massive fan of them. And there are parts of Lance Armstrong that are terrible, absolutely terrible.
Sure.
But there are also parts of that man that are nobody's seen before in sport.
Yeah.
I think he redefined sports.
He's
in
one
general.
Of a kind, for sure. And I can agree with what you're saying. I mean, there's parts of him that you're just
awful.
Like,
oh, yeah. He was a monster. I mean, he was a monster at times. Yeah. But I think people who, and I listen to his podcast a lot, and I think if you hear the guy talk now, I like letting people be human, and he's realizing a lot of the faults of his past. And he's very open about that now.
He's still a little bit arrogant, but he's so
by
much
nature,
more
he's
like
arrogant.
Grounded now.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. When did that start for you? When did you first identify with Lance as being like your hero?
Yeah. You know, this is going to sound super cheesy, but I know. So my dad used to ride his bike trainer in our Kettering home in a really, really, really dingy basement. And I used to go down there and hang out with him. And you know, anybody who had a military father, my father was on TDY a lot. So, you know, was away a lot. So as a kid, when he was down there and watching Lance in the Tour de France, I would love going down there and just watching it with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like with anybody who has, you know, limited time with their dad when they're younger, or just like, you know, military growing up, it was like really valuable time to me. And my dad was an awesome fan of cycling and loved sharing that with me. And it was something we both shared, and he loved Lance. So to me at that age, that was love of cycling meant love of Lance. If you were an American, that was you love, there was nothing better than watching the Texan with the guy and, you know, running next to him with the American flag and the Speedo cheering while the French absolutely hate him. It was like this thing that just you loved at that time in cycling.
Gotcha. Speaking of your parents, you've got a couple of good ones.
I'm very lucky. Yes. Tell us,
just give us a little brief background on your folks.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
the follow-up question to that, just to put in the bank there, is do you think that's where you got a lot of your drive, your motivation?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I 100% credit my parents. It was my dad grew up. So both my parents were military growing up. So they moved around the world quite a bit, but both settled roughly in Ohio when everybody retired and all done. My dad grew up, I want to say, and then they settled in, I want to say it was Beaver Creek. I think they were in Beaver Creek, Ohio. And then my mom was in Fairborn, Ohio, I believe, which is right outside the military base. Uh-huh. And my dad was cycling when he got into the military, I believe, is when he really picked up cycling. And the United States Air Force cycling team has a really cool team and then club. Mm-hmm. So my dad was in the club and would do the Ragbri races every year and was like a touring rider, but loved riding. And my mom was a runner. Oh, I thought she was originally a runner and did, you know, she picked up running out of, God, I think it was actually, this is too personal of a story for her, but it was after one of her, obviously before she met my dad, one of her long-term boyfriends broke up with her and she had, you know, ran in high school and stuff like that and then gotten away from it a little bit. And in her early 20s after this breakup, she was like, well, screw you. I'm just going to start running and get all my anger out that way.
Poured herself into it, yep.
And then she's doing ultras and Ironmans, you know, later. But so she, my mom, I think, is where I get a lot of my base aerobic engine from. Uh-huh. You know, my mom will always tell you she's never been fast, which she's lying because she was quick for a bit. But she has always been somebody who jumps into ultra-type running. She's done a bunch of Ironmans. She's been racing triathlon for years and years and years. I actually think her first triathlon was actually at Travis Air Force Base over in Northern California, Bay Area, California.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so actually when I went and visited San Francisco a couple weeks ago, it was cool because I actually got to drive right by that exit where Travis Air Force Base is, which was awesome. It was cool just to, like, you know, drive by. I was showing her pictures. She's like, oh, this hasn't changed and this hasn't changed. Yeah. So, yeah, she would be where I got my base aerobic engine from. And I am very lazy compared to my mother. My mother is, this woman will wake up at like 3:30 a.m. every day. Like when she had, you know, two kids working still and even trying to get her master's degree for teaching, she was still running like at that time. She would just wake up insanely early and run. So
that's crazy.
That's kind of where I get, I think, my aerobic engine and kind of my, I don't, you know, everybody's got a level of discipline. So I always hate saying discipline, but it's just that neurotic, like I need to be doing this thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely where I get my love for running from. My dad, I've really got my love for cycling from him, from cycling history, just to being a fan of Lance Armstrong and also just loving bike racing.
Yeah.
You know, I really do love bike racing because of watching that when I was young and then just growing up watching the Tour de France over and over and over again. Yeah. So
you just needed like a crazy uncle who loved to swim a lot, and that would
exactly
been the trifecta that was, for you. And that's why your swim is still something that you're working on.
we did not, I don't think we had a single good swimmer in our family. No, we definitely have aerobic genes because my grandfather, my mom's dad, was a very good Air Force pilot, mm-hmm. Won awards, everything like that. You know, was a Purple Heart winner, and definitely I knowing more and more fighter pilots. If anybody knows anything about fire, they're very aerobically fit. It's almost like being an F1 driver too. Mm-hmm. You really have a high aerobic engine to do something like that and to be able to pull G's. So I do think that we have that gene in our family, but the funny thing that I always tell people is I'm not an athlete at all. Never have been. I will work at a sport until I'm average at it. But this is loved basketball, loved soccer. I will work at them until I'm proficient in it. But my little brother had all of the athletic genes in the family. And this is Jay coming from sports like baseball and stuff that you know there's a twitchiness. There's a type 2 fiber development that some people have and some people don't. And, you know, as I watch enough young athletes, I could watch an athlete for 10 minutes and tell you, like, that kid's twitchy or this kid is going to have to work hard. that was my joke. I was like, this kid's going to have to develop his aerobic engine or that kid's got it. And my little brother, if you ever watched us play soccer, we were young. He was he was an amazing soccer player from a very young age. And I never had that twitchiness. So our joke was, whatever type 2 fibers in our family were floating around all manifested into Nico. And he's not a bad aerobic athlete. The kid can jump out and still run a sub 19 minute 5K if he really wants to.
Sure.
But he definitely is more of a – he ran the 400 in college for a year or two.
He was the traditional sports kid.
Absolutely.
You were the – all right, I'm the endurance sport kid that can go out there and just –
probably why I tried skateboarding, because I was like, I'm not good enough at the soccer thing. I think I need to try skateboarding.
You've lived in some places in your life.
Yeah.
It's quite a few places and abroad.
I was lucky enough to, so I was actually born in Florida, near Eglin Air Force Base. We moved to Ohio, and then from Ohio, we moved to, Seoul, South Korea. So Seoul, South Korea is where, even though we were only there for a short bit, I think like two, three years, I really loved East Asia. So as a kid, that's really where like a lot of my childhood memories actually are from, is from Southeast Asia. And while we were there, we were in China, and then we were in Thailand too. We never made it to Japan. I would have loved, that's actually something I want to do here in the next couple of years, is go out to Japan, because I love East Asia and never got to see Japan. But we came back to Ohio, and that's where we stayed for a while, which was weird, because in the first 12, 13 years of my life, we traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my dad retired, so we ended up staying in, of all places, Ohio. I love every Ohio listener here, especially you, Dove. I love Ohio, and the people there are the greatest in the world. But you would think of everywhere in the world we went, we're like, really? Like, we ended up in Ohio, of all places. But as I grew up in Ohio, I realized the people in Ohio are amazing. Like, it is
That's
such
what makes
a,
Ohio special.
Oh, it is. It's the only reason people would stay there, is because the people are great.
Yeah.
But, I stayed in Ohio until... got through DPT school, and then I went to India for a short bit and practiced in India, and then went to, which was in Bengaluru, India, which is in southern India, and then came back and then went over to Colorado for a short bit. Mm-hmm. And then I was really leaning towards actually moving to Colorado for a bit. I still have some great friends there. Some of the best friends I've made in the endurance world live in Colorado. And then came back to Ohio and got a job offer out in Washington, and came and visited a friend of mine in Portland, and then was like, all right, jump the car, we're driving all the way to Washington, and haven't regretted it at all. So
you've done pretty well here.
It's again, it's like Ohio, it's the people that were here. I mean, obviously Washington's a little bit, you know, it's there's river, ocean, mountain right there.
Yeah.
Bend, Seattle. It's a little bit easier to like the area, but I think I've loved Vancouver because of the people here that I've met.
Yeah, it's been good stuff. So if you could just pick one place, if it was just one place to call home for the rest of your life, is it going to be here?
Or? Oh, man, that's tough. You know, it would be here or not Boulder, Colorado, but like around Denver.
Okay.
Those would be the two places.
Sure.
Just because of everywhere I've lived and visited, those are my two favorite, definitely.
Gotcha.
It's either Vancouver, you know, and maybe like a part, like outside of Seattle. I really like parts of Seattle, I think, are really cool too.
Gotcha.
Like as like a retirement area, it'd be cool to retire up there. But right now, Vancouver's amazing.
Gotcha. Yep. All right. So you're a pretty goal-oriented person. You're pretty driven, and you, I'm sure, still have some pretty lofty goals. I mean, what has always been your goal with triathlon? I mean, obviously, I'm sure for a long time it was just to make it to the pro ranks. But
absolutely was, yeah.
Has it always been just make it to the pro ranks and just compete? Or do you have something that you still are striving after, something that you still want to accomplish?
You know, it's funny you mentioned, because I was actually just talking with Josh about this. We were talking about goals, and me and Cassie talk about this all the time, is I have this little saying I've kind of branded to myself, and I joke about it because it's not what it sounds like, but I say goals are overrated. And what I always meant by that with Josh was that I've realized that I love endurance sports because my goals are changing on a daily, a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. Like my goal this next week is like, make sure you hit these volumes, make sure you nail this workout. And I've realized that when I was younger, I had these big long-term goals, and I think they stressed me out. So what I realized was that I think even in business, this is good too. And Jake obviously knows this better than anybody. And so is Lance Hepler, is those little weekly goals are what I think keep you going on a daily basis. And I'm realizing I find more joy in completing a good workout every time.
Sometimes it's really hard to look at the big goal.
Yeah.
Because that's so much of an undertaking. But these smaller, more palatable goals and accomplishments that you can get done.
I think they make you feel more fulfilled along the way. You're right. Because if you're only looking at the big goal all the time, you're just going to feel like a failure all the time. Because you realize how far away you are from that goal on a daily basis. Yeah.
And it and you never get to that goal the way that you think you are. So if you just stay focused on that, your little distractions are gonna kick you off. But
it's like you know, if you're directing a boat, it's like the goal is to get to wherever you're going, but you got to adjust the sails and adjust everything along the way. If you're only thinking about where you're going, then you're going to lose it.
So there are a lot of people who do triathlon and their goal is just to do as best they possibly can in the age group. It's very few people that can actually make it to the ranks of being a professional and get their pro card and race at that level.
Yeah.
You've done that. What else do you want to accomplish as a professional? Yeah. I mean, what would you love to say I was able to, like, someday you sit down and tell your kids, I'm so proud of the fact that I was able to accomplish fill in the blank.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. Bob Duncan owned the bike shop I originally worked in called Go Fast Multisport. Uh-huh. Bob Duncan was Andrew Starkwitz's coach, and I've talked about him on this show before. Former Marine guy, one of the toughest people I'll ever meet in my life, but also one of the most truthful. He was he never blew smoke. ever. That guy never blew smoke ever. So the group I grew up around training with, when you would talk about long-term goals with Bob, it was funny because he'd pretty instantly shut it down if he didn't believe you could do it. Which was actually kind of refreshing because it really forced you to look at, okay, this is where I'm at right now. And if I want to impress Bob, I need to really get better at this. So we all were just trying to impress Bob was always the joke. We were these young 20-year-olds who all thought we were fast. Who just wanted Bob to think we were fast basically.
Yeah.
But, I remember Bob had kind of asked me once, he was like, what's your goal with this triathlon thing? We were just at work one day, which is rare for Bob to ever ask anybody like a question. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? And I actually told him, I was like, I think I want to go pro in triathlon. He was like, okay, what do you think time-wise gets you to pro? And I was like, I think I need to be sub 4 hour in the 73. And this was before I had ever actually raced a 73. Mm-hmm. And he told me, at that time, he even said, he kind of thought about it for a second, and it was a massive compliment from Bob, but he said, I think maybe you could do that, which to me was enough. I was like, oh, man, if Bob Duncan says even I got a 20% chance, I think maybe I could do that one day. So now he backed that right up with, he was like, but you really suck at swimming right now, and your run is definitely not good enough, is exactly what he backed it up with. So he told you exactly what you were not good enough at that time. Mm-hmm. And I just love that about him. He was very truthful. So for me, in my head until very, very recently, that was the long-term goal, was just get under 4 hours. Now, I haven't raced a fast enough course always where that's been fully possible, but when I got my pro card, I finally was in those under 4:10 range. Mm-hmm. And I realized how slow now the advancement is. It's kind of like, I know cyclists realize this too, as your watts per kilo start going up and up and up, they hit a plateau point where all of a sudden a 0.1 gain is like a whole year of work. Mm-hmm. In triathlon, I think once you get close to that 4 hour mark and you're right there, even a 2-3 minute gain is a pretty massive gain. So 404 being what I've done, you know, is Palm Springs going to be the course? Maybe, but my goals now have shifted from, yes, in my head, I still have this, like, I need to go under four in my head. I want to feel very competitive in a race. I need to be in that top half.
Gotcha.
I want to be in the top half of the field. That's kind of my next big goal. Yeah.
That's going to be a good accomplishment.
It will. I mean, that and me and Josh are going to hopefully race Norseman, which is a crazy hard full Ironman in Norway. And we're planning on like 2024. It's an insanely hard Ironman, but that's along with it.
You've been a pro now for 2 years,
yep.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. This is my third season technically if we count 2020. Nobody does.
Do you feel like you're still getting faster?
Yeah. Yeah, that's and this is when we talk about the long-term goals versus that day-to-day stuff. Uh-huh. I mean, I look at, and this is, I hate bragging or anything, but when we're talking about numbers, me and Josh, for instance, we train together all the time. We'll sit there and we won't boost each other up, but we really talk about how the numbers look. Mm-hmm. And my cycling has slightly plateaued, but actually gotten more robust, I would say, like stronger base.
Yeah.
But my running has really, really improved this last year. I've gone from what I thought was a good runner to realizing that that's actually not good in the pro field to now being a middle of the pack runner with, I think on my best day, I can be in the top quarter of guys in the field. I don't see myself as that far behind even guys that are very fast.
Gotcha.
Running. Yeah.
Now you just clicked over that 30-year-old mark this past year. And in the triathlon world,
I did that 5 years ago, actually. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, you were 25 going on 30 for a long time.
Yes.
In the pro triathlon world, there's still guys that are wicked crazy fast, mid to late 30s, even the early 40s.
Yeah, I'm 40 now, so yeah.
You've still got more years of layering up, I would think. So is there going to be a threshold or a point in time or some numbers or metrics that you're going to look at and you're going to be like, Yeah, my year over year numbers are looking to be about the same, if not like maybe starting to taper down. What are you going to do at that point in time?
This is going to be when my running starts to plateau.
Uh-huh.
If my running really hits a hard plateau at some point, I'm going to be, that's when I'm probably just going to, I'm not going to try and hang around the pro field as long as possible. I've got plenty of other things I want to do in my life. And that's, you know, there's, once you hit, I think 35, 36, if you're not seeing big results coming up, then what I'm doing is I'm dropping down back to age group and I'm doing races that I think are interesting and fun. But I'm not somebody who's going to, I've kind of joked about this before where it's like, oh man, I can't wait about not being fast anymore. That day will probably never come for me. Cause I even look at my mom, my mom's in her 60s and she claims that she just does races for fun, but she looks up the results of the people she's racing and, you know, USA national age group stuff. She still wants to qualify for stuff. She's still going out there racing ladies and wanting to beat them. And like, I think no matter how old you get, and every cyclist who's ever done a time trial against guys they've been racing for 10 years, you're never going out there like, oh, I just want to have fun in this time trial. It's like, yeah, the fun part is going as hard as you can. That's why we do this and why everybody's done it for so long. So I do think there will come a time where I'm going to take a year and focus on things like trying to do run a fast marathon. There will be a time period where I would love to, if we get a good, robust road schedule again, just do road racing for a year. I've always wanted to like just focus on cycling for a year for fun, just do different types of cycling.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So I think there will come that day. Unfortunately, right now with triathlon is you kind of, if you're not somebody who's doing it full-time professionally, you have to stay pretty sharp year-round because I don't have the opportunity to do these big blocks of training that some of these younger guys do who just do triathlon. So like if my job is just triathlon, I kind of take like 2-3 weeks off in an off season, really rest, hang out, do stuff. And then I can bump right back into 30 hour training block and just crush it for 2 months.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're getting married next year.
Yes. Yes. June 18th, 2022.
You're not excited about that at all, are you?
So excited. So excited. Yeah. I think I'm excited for it to be done so we can go on our honeymoon is honestly what I'm excited about.
That is a pretty fun time.
Yeah, I think I'd rather just go to that part.
You're lucky, dude. You got yourself a special woman.
Yes,
Cassie absolutely. Is like salt of the earth. Just a great, great, great person.
I'm still like just like crossing my fingers that she doesn't run away on me here before in the next 7 months, you know?
Yeah, there you go. You guys are going to have a lot of fun times, fun memories, and hopefully a great family and all that other fun stuff. So, but that aside, and if you push aside like the training stuff and triathlon-y stuff and skateboarding and working out stuff, what other kind of hobbies and things are you into? Or is there just no time in Evan Price's life for anything different?
You know, it's funny. I've started to realize that I really don't have a lot of cool hobbies, but I was just talking with my little brother about this. So I used to write a lot. I actually wanted to be a journalist.
Really?
I wanted to be a journalist when I was young.
Interesting.
Interestingly enough, I actually wanted to be, I'm not making this, I wanted to be a French Revolution time period historical journalist when I was in high school. Not making that specific. That specific. I loved my AP Euro class and read a lot about the French Revolution. Loved that time period in history. I think my mom still has them, probably, but I was a creative writer when I was young. I was on a creative writing team, actually.
Interesting.
It was called Power of the Pen. And they were contests. You would go and you had 30-minute prompt and you were sitting in a room of 20, 30 kids and you had 30 minutes and there was a prompt that would come up on the board and you had to write a story in 30 minutes. And I loved that so much. I would get so amped up. I would practice.
See,
like I practiced
this is why we do this, Evan. I had no idea. I had no idea. So that's fantastic.
There is a treasure trove. And by treasure trove, I mean probably worth absolutely nothing. But of all the stories I started and never finished. So I had multiple books that I wrote as a kid that made it to like page 100 and then I would just stop.
Gosh. So, Mary, if you're listening to this, please email those over to me.
There's a massive white binder somewhere. I so hope she's never thrown this away, but there's probably like 20, 30 unfinished stories in there. There's probably 3,000.
So is that something that you could ever see yourself getting back into?
Yeah. I was talking with Nico about this. I really want to get back into writing. I've really wanted to write a book about running, just about running in general. I have a lot of outspoken opinions on how important I think endurance sports in general are and specifically running for just people. Now, I joke with my cyclists, you guys are well ahead of the curve. Don't worry. You don't need to be like running like crazy, but I think a lot of I get on my soapbox with some of my patients. I think a lot of the problems in the world could be solved if everybody rode a bike or ran. I really truly believe it.
Yeah.
And I want to write books that start to approach that topic from a very palatable, outtake from somebody who's in the medical field. I think a lot of the endurance books that we read as endurance sports athletes, nobody else would care about. Mm-hmm. Like, I just read a book on Lance Armstrong. Nobody cares. Like, you know, it's like nobody wants to hear what Lance's FTP was in that time period. We care, but your typical person does not. So.
True. So when you're writing these stories, were these written on an old school classic typewriter? Because you're the Luddite.
I'm in my 30s now, yeah, and I'm an elder millennial, I guess is what you call it now.
I don't know, dude. I don't even know if you qualify as a millennial. I think you failed millennial classic. You're like the Luddite that's like
I think the
baby
that
boomer
I just
Luddite.
Figured out how to do an Instagram story probably disqualifies me from being a millennial. So.
Oh, that's funny. How do you feel about technology these days? Oh, is God, it going too fast for you?
Yes, it is. I was just having this talk with somebody about TikTok. I'm like, I tried to. So you know how Facebook has like the TikTok attachment now?
Sure.
Have you seen it yet? Okay.
Well, it's like their stories, right?
Yeah. It's like they pop up. That's apparently on TikTok. I saw in the little corner it says like TikTok on the bottom. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna try and watch this and understand. Because I even have friends of mine who are in the PT world who are trying to go into TikTok as their marketing.
Yeah.
And I watched it, and I'm like, I can't do this. If this is where marketing is going, I'm just going back to marketing and newspapers. This is like, I'll just go with Instagram is as far as I think I can go right now.
Yeah.
And TikTok to me was just, it's too much. I can't do it.
I mean, I'm sure that there's some value to the marketing there, but it's like somebody's going to see that, and they're going to forget all about you.
Yep.
30 seconds later.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, you made this awesome video you put all this time into. Yeah. Well, guess what? These kids have 30-second attention spans. They don't care, and they forgot it already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of the same sentiment that I have with Twitter. I think that...
Oh, Twitter's, yeah. That's just I never got it.
Twitter's giant garbage can
yes,
of waste
I was,
of time.
I was saying, Twitter, yeah. Twitter is basically all angry people just venting. Yeah. That's all it is. It's terrible.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's that works.
Yeah.
Evan, I'm still wondering. I'm still scratching my head. I've got a question. When do you sleep?
I promise you, I really do get close. I'm not sure if I'm always there. Close to 8 hours a night.
Gotcha.
I really do.
Seriously? So you are a grandpa Price.
Yeah.
You must be going to bed at like 8 o'clock at night.
9, almost on the dot.
Oh my gosh.
9, almost on the dot. Actually, it's like Cassie will get on. If it hits 9:05, she's like, go to bed right now. We're like, cool. We're going to bed. So.
Wow.
Yeah. We are on.
I honest to God didn't think that you were getting any sleep at all. Cause I mean, I know what kind of.
There was a time period where I was not. Yeah. There was. So I've done a better job recently there was a time period where I was drowning in paperwork just as a medical. Anybody who's a medical provider listening to this is just, I know they're all like, yes, I know. He was like, yeah, yep. I'm there with you. It's awful. But I did a little bit better at managing my paperwork and making sure I was making it as time efficient as possible. Mm-hmm. So I really realized I needed to set my goals and say, if I want to be a good PT, which means engage with my patients when they're here and not worried and stressed all the time, I needed to try to eliminate stressors around that. Mm-hmm. And if I want to actually be fast in triathlon, I can't be sleeping six and a half, seven hours a night.
No.
You know, not I can't. I mean, the guys I'm racing, I joke, I follow them on Instagram and they're posting their whoop stats and they're like, oh, 98% recovered. I'm like, nah, that must be nice. You know, that's great. I just shoved in my workout at 8 p.m. But
getting no sleep is no way to live a life. Let me tell you.
No. And that's, I mean, and you remember coming back from your injuries, like trying to operate on, and I mean, you would have loved 7 hours of sleep at that time, but trying to operate off
4 or 5 continuous hours. But yeah,
it's
I get
like,
you.
And I just don't get why. I think we do have a little bit of a, and I'm part of this problem too. And I've realized this recently is we do have a little bit of a, I think in endurance sports, those who are career driven too, which is a lot of people in endurance sports, it's usually just high producing people. There's a little bit of a toxic, like try to grind, like be the guy that's always working the hardest. And that was something I tried to pride myself off of and realize that I'm just going to have to cut that at some point and be, it's okay to be the person who's like, yeah, you know, I worked and then I went home and then I made sure I didn't have to go to work early the next morning.
Gotcha.
Like, that's fine too.
So let's just take a look at your typical week though. You're a clinic director for a physical therapy clinic and you probably put in 60 hours a week.
Yeah. If you add in like marketing and all that stuff and just answering emails and paperwork. Yeah, probably between 50 and 60. I'm bumping. I've actually been tracking it lately. I'm trying to bump it down closer to 50. So I'm trying to get more efficient.
Good for you.
Yeah.
How many hours a week do you train?
20, almost on the dot every week.
Almost on the spot. So you're up to
70, between there, 75.
70 to 80, somewhere in their range. And then, you know, you're hanging out with Cassie sparingly. I mean, there's not much time left over. And then I guess that explains why you're not writing stories about the French Revolution,
This is why my historical journalism degree was never going to happen. So.
When was the last time you got like bona fide legitimately sick?
Oh, man, I'm going to have to
knock on wood.
We're knocking on wood here. No lie, it was a while ago. It was 20, 2020 January. I know everybody's listening to this, like, did you have COVID? I don't know. Maybe I was in it. So this was, you know, if COVID started in March of 2020, in January of 2020,
cases that were reported in Seattle in December.
So funny you mentioned Seattle, because I flew out of Tacoma to a work meeting that was in Texas somewhere. Yep. Where were we in Texas? Dallas, Fort Worth. Flew there. I got very sick that first morning there. And as one does in the previous generation, who cares? You go to the thing anyway, and you just pass it to everybody there probably, which is, I'm
herd immunity.
Now that I'm admitting this on here, people are probably going to send me a bunch of hate mail, like, you started COVID in Texas. But, you know, there was, it was definitely not COVID symptoms. I was just, it was a bad cold, like bad head cold, and, you know, felt very low energy. And this is how I always handled being sick was I went and bought some orange juice, drank about a gallon of orange juice, and then ran really hard. I always like run really, really, really hard and then drink more orange juice.
That was my next question is, how do you deal with being sick, Evan?
Train.
You're crazy.
Try to sleep. I definitely try to get more sleep, but it's my uncle always told me, he's like, man, I just overhydrate whenever I get sick.
Sure.
Just, he used to joke, he's like, just pee it out. And for whatever reason, when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, that's how I'm going to approach this. And I don't think that's an effective way to deal with being sick, but for whatever reason, my body has always responded well to it, probably because I trained it that way from when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
But that usually works for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Couple more questions for you. You're coaching a bunch of triathletes. How's that going for you?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's great. Just absolutely in the, you know, coaching is never as clean and easy as I think. People who download like structured training plans, I always joke, it's like, in theory, you'd think, man, that should work. Like every single time I listen to a Dylan Johnson video or an empirical cycling video, and you know, I'll do all this research and stuff, and you're like, man, this worked in this lab setting.
Yeah.
And then you realize that coaching at the end of the day is basically just trying to help people manage their time and life.
Yep.
That's it. That's
push it through and teaching them.
Oh yeah.
When to go hard and when to back off and just kind of.
And hey, I, you know, my kid just had a rough day and I stayed up till 2 a.m. with them. Should I train tomorrow? No.
Yeah.
It's fine. Skip it. Like it's not the end of the world. Just like, we'll move it. We'll move it around. So
people do get pretty passion blind and they get stuck in tunnels and tunnel vision, and to have that objective outside voice coming in and helping coach them down the path.
It's more, it's management of recovery. Yeah. There are no magic intervals. I do a lot of research and I love that research aspect of it. And I love looking at that stuff, but unless you're coaching a machine, there are machines out there. You know, Josh Mond is a machine.
Yep.
there are machines out there, but everybody's got life stuff that feeds into that. And you have to manage that part of it, or you're just not being a good coach.
About how many people are you coaching right now?
12 right now.
In an ideal 13. World, if you had all the time in the 14, world, how many would you love to coach?
20. I'd love to coach as much as possible.
Yeah.
I would love to have a team where I'm just coaching it, actually.
Gotcha.
It'd be great.
Yeah. You're working with our triathlon team and you're heading that up and you're the one that everybody looks up to.
The guy with no time who loves to pass on some assignments, but yes, that is, I try to be as engaged as possible. And actually we're going to have hopefully some team stuff coming up here. We're trying to get a group run together here soon too.
I'd really appreciate and love the stuff that you're doing with the juniors. I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I'm passionate about the juniors and making sure that we've got the seeds planted for the future. And you're doing a great job of that with the triathletes.
Awesome group. Yeah. Well, it's easy when you get to work with a family like the Wicks too. You know, I mean, they're just, oh my gosh, what a driven group of family just in general.
Gotcha. All right. So last two questions.
Yep.
What would you change about triathlon?
Oh, that's awesome.
I know it's a huge question and you could probably go on for days and days and days, but like if there was one thing that you were put in charge of triathlon and you get to change one thing, what is it?
It's a cultural change. I love that the sport is so open and accepting. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has a lot of elitism in it, which I think is great.
Yep.
I actually think cycling has less elitism than people think. I really think there's that cycling elitism thing, I think, is still like an old school Europe thing that really is not in America as much as people think it is to some extent. There's always bad apples. There's bad apples in triathlon too.
Yeah.
But I want it to be more funny, more embracing of making fun of ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think we need to take away the hero complex from it. I've talked about triathlon's got a hero complex where I think we take it too seriously because anybody doing an Ironman seems like this massive undertaking. And we scare people from even wanting to try triathlon because we're like, you know, you watch NBC's coverage of Kona and you're like,
yeah,
this guy has no arms and no legs and made it to the finish. You're like, that's an amazing human being, but you don't need to be the most driven human being of all time to get into a triathlon.
Yeah.
You can be anybody and do a triathlon. Anybody can do a triathlon. And it's, I think we've created this hero complex where it's like, undertaking the most amazing challenge of your life. It's like, no, just go out there and have fun.
Yeah.
Make fun of yourself. We all look like idiots out there. We're running around in spandex And like all the sports make fun of us. Runners make fun of us. Swimmers make fun of us. Cyclists obviously make fun of us. We just need to make fun of ourselves too, because it will it will make the sport way more palatable to more people.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Last question.
Yep.
Same premise, physical therapy.
Yeah.
What would you change about physical therapy? God. I know that this one, that there's some things that I could, if you could see Evan's face right now, the disgust level just
I literally could write him. No lie, I could write a book on this. I could very much write a book on this. The main thing I want to change in physical therapy, there are a lot, but there's one big one. And this goes for medical providers too, for doctors as well. MDs. I will say that we, you know, PTs, we are doctors too, but I try not to confuse people too much with that. PT needs to stop scaring people. We do a really bad job at scaring people. Hmm. We need to stop telling people that there is a correct way to do everything. There's a slightly maybe more advantageous way to do everything, but we need to, I hear so many people come in and tell me, and they say, I can't squat anymore. They said, I got bad knees. Or I can't run. They took an x-ray and they said, my knees are bad. Or, you know, a doctor in 1988 told me that like my back's all out of whack and I went to a chiropractor. He told me I'm off balance and, you know, my hip's out. So I just can't get into biking. I don't think I can do biking. We do that to people. That's not people thinking that. I think PTs and doctors, we forget that people respect us, whether we deserve it or not. And a lot of time we don't deserve it, but they respect us. So when we tell them something, they take that to heart. So if we scare somebody from ever running again or ever biking again or ever swimming again, they're not going to because they said, well, doc told me not to. So if we don't really check ourselves and make sure that we're empowering people and saying, hey, yeah, this injury sucked. Like this is bad, but the human body can adapt from almost anything. Mm-hmm. You will get better and your body will find a way around it. Will it ever be perfect again? Maybe not, but we're going to find a way for you to get back on the bike. We're going to find a way for you to run again. If I heard more PTs doing that instead of, man, my PT told me I got trash knees, so I can't run anymore. I've literally heard, I had a patient come in recently and tell me the doc told him, he's like in his 40s or something, runner, should, and he's going to get back to running because, you know, well, I'm lucky enough that you trust me with this.
Yeah.
He told me, he's like, yeah, man, the radiologist told me that my knees are ground to the bone. I'm like, ground to the bone? I'm like, what was he, like writing a horror novel as he's writing this x-ray radiologist? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, and there's been a lot of research showing.
Yeah.
Long-term results from patients, especially osteo patients,
sure,
you know, musculoskeletal injuries, the language that medical providers use is a good predictor of long-term results. Not as much the actual results of the x-ray or MRI.
Interesting.
And this is interesting when you hear how over generations we talk about arthritis or we talk about conditions like that.
Yeah.
I hope we start to change our language there and make it more, you know, less terrifying for people. And they even in this one study, like literally clarified what doctors should like were saying and weren't saying. Mm-hmm. And what they were saying a lot of times was a lot of the negative things. They started finding that more and more frequently if that was used, that patient in a 10-year follow-up was not doing those things that they said that they weren't going to do.
Interesting.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Wow. So change the narrative, huh?
Change the narrative. Yep.
I like that, Evan.
Empower people. Yeah.
Yeah. You can see that in so many different places. Yeah. And if you go back and you think about it, and just listeners, if you're thinking about this, you think about all the people that tell you that kind of stuff and where that's derived from.
Yep. Crazy. I mean, and this is why I think more and more people would get into biking if there wasn't this narrative out there of like, oh, it'll break your body down. Mm-hmm. No, it'll make your cardiac system as strong as heck. It strengthens your muscles.
Dude, we could go on for days and days about how many people
help your mood. That alone. If you just had one benefit of cycling, which it could help the anxiety disorder crisis we're in this country, that alone to me is like, well, let's get people on bicycles. Yep. There you go.
It always makes you happy. So,
yep.
Awesome, Evan. I appreciate that.
All right. Yeah.
Any questions for me?
No, am I still allowed on the podcast after this? No, I'm joking.
Maybe. Absolutely.
Right when I get through this race, I am going to be definitely on the podcast more this winter and then hopefully got some fun stuff coming up too. So
we're looking forward to that that back pedal. So to wrap this thing up, let's do our one last thing. You got a one last thing for us?
Racing on Sunday. This is my one last thing is that entire race comes down to me making it to that first buoy with people still around me on the swim. So there's my one last thing is I've got to race to that first buoy and make sure I still have anybody with me. So.
Gotcha. My one last thing is going to be our GoFundMe campaign for our Bikes for Kids campaign is up and going and alive. And just in like the first couple days, like before I really even like truly like said, hey, everybody do this. Like we told people about the ugly Christmas sweater ride and it was just like a submission in there.
Yeah.
We already got like over $1,000 donated to the thing.
So we're on it. Dang.
And we haven't even like started.
There's no
like,
marketing we for it yet. Yeah.
So that's really
the name it's built up though. People knew it's coming and know. Yeah. That's
it's our
awesome.
Sixth annual ugly Christmas sweater ride that's been always benefiting stuff. And it's been doing the stuff for the,
missing it this year.
The bikes for kids. But
I know.
We'll take lots of pictures and video for you. And
I will put on an ugly sweater after Palm Springs. I need to bring one. And then I'll jump on my bicycle for 5 seconds after the race and be like, there we go. There was my ugly sweater ride.
Gotcha. So if you're interested in helping us out with the Bikes for Kids thing, you can go to our Facebook page and just dial podcast on the Facebook. And there should be plenty of links in there for you to find. And you can help us out. Every little bit counts. Even if it's like,
pass that around to our Ohio folks. Stuff.
There you go. Yeah, even like $3, $4, $5 and do that enough times over, you're going to help us buy bikes for kids. So appreciate that. Evan, thank you so much, man.
Absolutely.
Good luck at your race this weekend. Thank you, everybody guys. Else, thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week. Until then, bye for now.